He's America's top lantern-based superhero. Today on the show, we discuss Green Lantern. Welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin, the second.
The second?
Yeah.
How you two dudes doing?
I guess I'm okay.
That's a weird, not what I usually expect you to say at the start of the podcast.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you got some news or something?
Preparing us for something?
I'm just a little thrown off because I'm sitting on an exercise ball.
Listening at home, Dan is sitting on an exercise ball. There is no funny story behind it. It is not interesting.
It's not a bit.
Just happening.
Yeah.
It's just a question of chair allocation.
Yeah.
You're not exercising your core.
Well, I probably am.
He should be.
Well, yeah.
Your core does need more exercise.
What are you saying about my core?
This is an intervention, Dan. You've got a weak core.
Okay.
Yeah. Stuart and I have both noticed it. The listeners have noticed it.
Your core is
crying out for strengthening. So this podcast is not about bad movies anymore. It's about your personal fitness regimen and your core.
This is shocking.
Have you ever seen the movie The Core? It's about you and your weak core.
I thought it was... Wasn't DJ Qualls in that?
Yeah, he goes into Dan's core to strengthen it.
Okay.
There's a big global catastrophe. It didn't work out and the world is destroyed.
Does he use some Pilates or something?
It's a giant exercise ball.
a lot of
planking.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And a lot of plankton.
Sounds like a good movie. I should check that out.
Nope.
You can go down to your local video store. It's filed under disaster movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's filed under box office disaster.
It's filed under movies where the Earth's magnetic core stops moving.
Yep.
Is that what happens?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And it causes...
massive bird deaths.
And buildings to fall over on top of people.
Yeah. And it gives Delroy Lindo a nice fat paycheck. Along with other character actors.
Yeah.
Tony Shalhoub was in it, I think.
So are we talking about The Core today?
No, we're talking about a completely different movie.
We're talking about a movie, and the movie we watched is one that's been requested multiple times by Flophouse fans.
And we actually said we're going to do it.
Just fucking teasing
it. Why are we wasting time on The Core? Who was in that again?
Tony Shalhoub.
Was that a Jennifer Connelly
TV's
movie?
TV's Monk.
No, that movie starred, what's-her-face, Million Dollar Baby.
That expensive baby. Oh, Goo Goo's Rockefeller.
So we watched today a movie called Green Lantern.
Green Lantern.
Green Lantern.
About a guy with a green lantern.
Yeah.
The end.
I mean, he does have...
El Lanterno Verde.
He has a green lantern. He has a green ring. They come as a matched set.
Yep.
You buy one, you got to buy the other.
He didn't buy them. They were given to him by a skinless alien.
Yeah, a skinless purple alien.
I wasn't really paying attention.
Yeah, Dan, during this movie, decided to go downstairs and check his mail. Then at one point, he was showing Stuart that he can play Sonic the Hedgehog on his iPad. Really, the movie really captivated
him. What is more important? The fact that I can play Sonic the Hedgehog on my iPad or Green Lantern?
It took him into a world of whimsy that he could not escape from.
Yeah, it's all about wish fulfillment, you know?
Yeah.
He wished to see Ryan Reynolds.
In his underpants.
Yeah.
And it happened.
Yeah, it happened. Mm-hmm.
Several times.
Yeah.
The movie knew that was what it had going for it.
There's a lot in this movie for the ladies. Ryan Reynolds with his shirt off.
Giant space monsters like that, right?
Peter Sarsgaard with enormous bulbous head.
Blake Lively's acting chops.
Yep.
Yeah.
Lots of great things. So this is a pretty simple movie, Green Lantern. It's your basic guy.
It's a comic book guy.
Yeah, based on the comic book Green Lantern.
It's based on the comic book guy character from The Simpsons.
Green Lantern is a Hal Jordan, a screw-up fighter pilot who...
A real maverick, if you will.
He's a real maverick, a real Iceman, a real goose, a real tough gun.
He seems to be...
A real Firefox.
He seems to be unafraid of anything but commitment.
Yeah, the one thing he's afraid of is getting close to people.
Well, and dying in a fiery crash.
He's not that afraid of that.
He's afraid enough of it that he bails out and brand new plane.
It's just foolishness not to bail out of a crashing plane.
But Blake Lively said, you had a chance to pull it out, and you didn't.
He was too busy.
She was talking about the time that they had a baby by accident.
Oh, okay.
Well, and he was too busy having a really weird flashback in the middle of this action
sequence.
Yeah,
to the time his dad died in a fiery crash.
Maybe we should start at the beginning, shall we?
They need to justify his fear of fiery crashes, because no one's afraid of that unless their dad died in one.
Unless they saw it happen.
Yeah.
So the movie begins with a bunch of cartoon aliens running around and getting in trouble.
Oh, the shenanigans.
They're just getting into hijinks. The movie starts with a voiceover, which is the sign that says this will be a bad movie.
Yeah.
And it starts by explaining that thousands of billions of trillions of quadrillions of quintillions of years ago, a race of aliens known as the Guardians, I think.
They probably named themselves that.
Yeah, nobody called them that. They gave themselves that name. Who are little purple guys with big heads and long flowing red robes. And by long, I mean like two-story long robes. Created a legion of space cops called the Green Lantern Corps to police the universe. And they used the power of the power of willpower, which is green.
Will is the greatest force in the universe.
Which is a very Nietzschean view of the universe, that the will to power is the most powerful force. But everyone gets a green ring. It gives them the power to do whatever they can imagine, as long as they imagine it coming out green. And there was also an evil yellow force, Fear, which took the form of a monster cloud called Parallax, and they trapped it inside of a planet on the other side of the universe, but then it escapes.
Yeah, and in the beginning of the movie, it escapes.
I hope so. And it escapes in the beginning. Cut to Reckless...
Kelly.
Reckless...
Yeah, who's serious?
In his second film role.
Yeah, that's the movie where Ned Kelly dates Robin Banks, the bank teller.
So, Reckless test pilot Ryan Reynolds screws up a presentation of their stealth drones before Senator Tim Robbins, and as Dan commented...
Oh, yeah, Tim Robbins has now entered the playing senator's phase of his career.
Which means he is a kind of an older gentleman with gray hair.
Yeah.
And he looks good in a suit.
And he doesn't have to move too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he just kind of stands around and says things like, well, we're looking into it.
Yeah.
You know, and like, this has very big possibilities.
You've disappointed me for the last time.
Yeah. You've got to understand, there are ways of doing these things. Mm-hmm. Ryan Reynolds threw some hot dog in, ruins the presentation
on the ski slopes,
and wrecks his plane. And then, like, he gets fired, but then he's not fired. And then a purple alien quits,
and then he's not fired. And then he's on some kind of double secret probation or something.
Exactly. And Parallax fights Abin Sur, a purple alien with no skin, who is the greatest of the Green Lantern heroes. And wounds him lethally, and Abin Sur crashes his spaceship into Earth and then sits in his spaceship submerged in water for like a day. Ryan Reynolds happens to stop by. Oh, no, he doesn't happen to stop by. A green glowing cloud picks up Ryan Reynolds outside of a child's birthday party and takes him to the dying Abin Sur.
Because the ring has chosen him. As they say, the ring chooses... The next Green Lantern.
So you're saying Abin Sur, the greatest Green Lantern, flies a spaceship that no other Green Lantern seemed to need.
They
to
all
fly
around through space by themselves.
But no, he decides to fly a spaceship.
Yeah, well, it's like a vintage spaceship that he cherried up. You know, he really took care of it. So he wants to show it off to Parallax because he knows Parallax is like a vintage spaceship nut. They see each other at the vintage spaceship shows.
He wanted to show him the spaceship and then crash it into something just to make him mad for killing him.
Crash? Yes. Oh, you're going to kill me? Well, I'll wreck this beautiful spaceship.
No!
So he sits waist deep in water for like 10 hours until the
water
ring...
Water, he's probably soiled.
Until the ring decides to go get him. And then leaves the spaceship until Ryan Reynolds pulls him out. This is a guy who, again, has control of a ring that can do anything. He never uses it to get him out of a spaceship. Abin Sur dies, but gives the ring to Ryan Reynolds because the ring has chosen him.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds calls his friend, who comes and picks him up in his car, and then they run away as a helicopter flies by, which they assume is an evil government, I guess.
Yeah, you know, whenever...
If you're at the side of a crashed spaceship, you should probably run away from any approaching vehicles.
Especially a helicopter with a searchlight.
At the best, you can expect the Men in Black to show up and erase your memory.
Yeah, and then you don't get to keep the ring.
Yeah.
You don't get to remember what, like, rap song they might sing before erasing your memory.
About how here they come.
The Men in Black?
Yep.
Are they galaxy protectors?
Yeah.
Galaxy defenders.
Because they won't let you remember, which kind of rhymes.
It doesn't rhyme at all. Defender and remember. Mm-hmm. Remember rhymes just as well with protector.
It's a slant rhyme.
It's a crappy rhyme.
Okay. Well, agree to disagree.
All right. This has been the Rhymecast, where we rate different rhymes from 16-year-old rap songs.
He becomes
Green Lantern. He puts on the ring. He charges it up with
Long
the battery.
Story short.
The ring tells him the oath, the Green Lantern oath, and then takes him to Oa, the planet of the Green Lanterns, where
after he used the ring's power to punch a bunch of guys whose jobs he lost.
That's right. A lot of guys were fired from the airplane factory because Ryan Reynolds lost them a government contract. So after he has a drink with his boss / ex-girlfriend.
They get in some kind of weird like dance fight in the parking lot.
He dances with his boss, Blake Lively.
Okay.
And then he goes to the parking lot and a bunch of guys go like, thanks for losing us our jobs. And in a very choreographed fight, punch him a lot. Mm-hmm. And then the Green Lantern ring and its infinite goodness and wisdom and justice allows Ryan Reynolds to punch them so hard that they all must be dead now.
Yeah,
one flies through a brick wall, one smashes into the front of a car. Yeah. We never hear from them again.
Men who have a legitimate gripe. I mean, maybe they shouldn't be beating up a guy in
violence is never the answer. But sometimes you get mad when one man is responsible for your livelihood being taken away.
Probably have families, children that aren't going to be able to eat now because of Ryan Reynolds hot dogging.
If only he could make a real hot dog to feed their family.
Yeah.
Instead, he was too busy hot-dogging in the skies.
Instead, he's too busy making a giant Green Lantern fist to punch them.
Knowing
this movie's sense of right and wrong, it was probably their families that were killed by the giant smoke monster at the end of the movie.
Yeah, well, don't jump ahead too fast.
Okay, spoiler alert, there's a smoke monster.
It's almost like the ring was waiting for an opportunity for Ryan Reynolds to organically use his power. Like it feels like everyone in the movie is subservient to screenplay structure. So like Avansard crashes his ship, he should immediately go get Ryan Reynolds. But it's not time for Ryan Reynolds to get the ring. It's not like page 25 of the script yet. So Avansard has to sit around and wait for Ryan Reynolds to go through the other stages of the hero's journey. And then like the ring should instantly take Ryan Reynolds to Oa so that he can become a Green Lantern. And instead it waits for him to discover the power because that's how movies work. That's not how the ring would work. So they go to Oa, and a bird fish man.
Yeah, he runs around the computer game or whatever he's in.
Yeah, it's all computer generated, and a bird fish man voiced by
Jeffrey Rush.
I was going to say Jeffrey Wright. By Jeffrey Rush says to him, "I'm the Green Lantern of sector such and such." And Ryan Reynolds goes, "That sector has 100 million sentient species. How do I know that?" And Jeffrey Rush says, "Your ring told you so. It tells you everything." And he goes, "Oh wow, where am I? What's this place? Who are those people?" And Jeffrey Rush has to explain all this to him because the ring apparently forgot to tell him the most important information.
Yeah. Well, he just wants to tell, you know, like what other people's purview is, you know.
I guess so. It's one of those things where it's like Jeffrey Rush needs to tell him this so that the audience can learn it, but all they need to do to make that okay is not have the ring supposedly have given him all universal information.
Right.
You know.
Because that's integral to the storyline of the movie, that he knows the population.
It's totally not. He never uses that knowledge, and he spends the rest of the movie asking people what the deal is.
Basically, every little bit of knowledge that he needs to use throughout this entire movie, somebody tells him very obviously.
Yes. He then goes into training as a Green Lantern with Michael Clark Duncan as the voice of Kilowog, a giant pig man,
mm-hmm.
who basically just throws things at him and yells things like, "You gotta toughen up to be part of the Corps. Hey, if you're afraid, you're gonna lose, so don't be afraid. Okay, I'm done."
Yeah, and how long does this training take?
About 2 minutes, 45 seconds.
Yeah, but I mean, like,
a day?
Yeah, he's been training for, like, maybe a day.
And that's when the most pretentious of the Green Lanterns, Sinestro...
Sounds like a good guy.
Yep, with a name like Sinestro, he's got to be good. Sinestro comes in and says, "I'll take over here, Kilowog."
He's also got a mustache.
He's got a mustache and a very high forehead and a widow's peak.
I've got a widow's peak. That
and he's
make
played
me
by
some sort
barely,
of
barely.
Some evil. Oh yeah, look at this. This
That's
is pretty...
barely a widow's peak.
And played by screen bad guy Mark Strong.
Who? What else did he play?
He was the bad guy in that Sherlock Holmes movie.
Oh yeah, Dressed to Kill.
All right, anyway.
And some other stuff.
So Sinestro is like, take it aside, Kilowog. He's mad because Abensur was his mentor, and I assume lover. I read that into it. And
Abensur's the skinless guy, right?
Yeah, who's dead now.
Okay.
And Sinestro says to Ryan Reynolds, hey, Ryan Reynolds, if you think you're so great, fight me. And so they fight. Ryan Reynolds has one sword. Sinestro has two swords.
Why'd he pick swords?
Ryan Reynolds picks them. I don't know.
Yeah,
because visually it's interesting.
Because okay. Ryan Reynolds, you know, probably has a lot of sword training from his time
being a pilot.
In the Air Force.
Okay.
He thought saber, meaning saber the plane, right. And the ring heard saber the sword.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the ring is not very good with synonyms. I'm sorry, not synonyms, homonyms.
Okay.
Or words with multiple meanings.
Yeah. Is that like words that sound like other words?
That's what a homonym is.
Okay.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. Words that sound like other words.com. Yeah. So they sword fight. Sinestro easily beats Ryan Reynolds and says, you're afraid. You're nothing. You're weak. That's your problem. You're afraid. You dishonor Abensur and leaves. And Ryan Reynolds doesn't say the obvious thing, which is, it's my first day. Like, yeah. I just started. I'm not going to be the greatest Green Lantern in the universe right away, Sinestro. Anyway, that's what I would have said.
And then somehow we're to assume that he quits, right? Because next time we see him, he's on Earth, and he's wearing...
He kind of tells Kilowog, like, I don't need to do this.
Mm.
That's the extent of his quitting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We are to believe that he
I've told
is,
that to bosses before.
Intrinsically yeah. a quitter. That is part of his character.
Yeah. His real problem isn't that he's afraid of things, which should be the challenge he has to overcome, but that he's a quitter.
Yeah.
Meanwhile... back on Earth, Abensur's body has been discovered by...
Peter Skarsgård?
The government.
Skarsgård.
And biology professor Peter Skarsgård.
Skarsgård.
Who here, he looks like the guy with the mustache from Workaholics, like in 25 Years.
Okay.
And a reference that everyone gets. Hit show Workaholics.
Look, it's on TV. People can look at what the guy looks like. He's got a gross, weedy mustache and long hair, and he's losing his hair on the front.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also Tim Robbins, the senator's son.
Okay.
Which I'm sure made Tim Robbins feel great that he's playing the father of Peter Sarsgaard.
I mean,
and they all grew up together. That's the other thing.
Like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Well,
Sarsgaard and
dad.
Blake Lively.
No.
Tim Robbins grew up with him?
Yeah, it's a time warp thing. So Tim Robbins is actually younger than his own son.
Okay.
Peter Sarsgaard and Ryle Reynolds and Blake Lively all grew up together
Raving
as
rabbits.
Kids. And
yeah.
Wait, what?
Nothing. I'm just saying things with two R's.
Oh, okay.
They went to the high school at Anytown, USA.
Yeah, so they so
Valley
not only
is what it's called.
So the level of coincidence in the movie is like ramped up by 1,000.
Yeah.
Because there's this huge space core of aliens, and there's a fear cloud that sucks people's skeletons out of their bodies, and it's all gonna pick the same three people basically to get involved mm-hmm. with.
Yeah.
But Peter Smarsnard is hired to investigate this alien body. And he accidentally pricks himself on something inside the body, which turns out to be a piece of the fear cloud monster Parallax.
Yeah.
And so, basically, long story short, his brain gets really big and gross, and he can read people's minds, and he has telekinetic powers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he becomes a real monster face.
Yeah. This all
and all of his nerdiness is amplified, too. He gets even more sniveling and pathetic.
Yeah, he actually... It, like, he's a character who the more powerful he gets, the weaker he gets. So by the end of it, he's got a huge brain, but he's in a wheelchair. And it's you have a climax that's between Ryan Reynolds, this handsome, fit guy, and a guy who basically looks like he has, like, elephantiasis or Down syndrome or something like that. It's really horrifying. Like, it's just gross that the movie is like, hey, comic book fans, we're going to have a frail nerd up against a super strong, handsome guy, and you've got to root for the handsome guy. Assholes.
And you'd expect that climax to take to be like a fight, like a physical fight of this nerd getting punched in the face a lot. But nope, it's just them talking. But,
they talk,
you know,
it out.
I don't want to get ahead of myself.
But this all comes together at the unveiling of some kind of thing at a grand gala at the airplane company. Turns out, I guess, the contracts went through and everybody's jobs are safe. Hooray! Hal Jordan, a.k.a. Ryan Reynolds, has been rehired, and everybody's at this party, and Stella Marsgaard decides that he is unhappy with everything. He hits on Blake Lively. She's not interested.
To no effect, yeah.
And so
she's not drawn in by his receding hairline and majestic mustache.
And his inability to not, like, giggle or snort or have snot falling out of his face.
Or awkwardly sniffle.
His weaselly tone.
They really
not...
went way out of their way to make him a totally unattractive character. And he is also somehow the most likable character in the whole movie.
Well, he's throwing himself into it with a bandit.
At least he looks like he's having fun. Well, the fish guy's pretty good, too.
Yeah.
And I know you were excited about Kilowog. You, every time he was on screen, you'd go, yay, pig face. Pig face here. So Smarsnard uses his mental powers to blow up the tap of the bar, which then hits a helicopter blade. Helicopter crashes. The helicopter's carrying his dad, Tim Robbins, and
wait, what? I this was when I was going to
you,
get
you
the mail.
The mail.
Why does he have to go through such a weird Rube Goldberg way to, like? I mean, like, if he has telekinesis, why not just, like, take the
because
helicopter down?
He
directly?
Doesn't want anyone to suspect it's him using,
think,
telekinesis powers.
Yes,
just
exactly.
Yank out a wire in the fucking.
Well, the thing is, helicopters almost never fail and crash, so people would get suspicious. But beer taps explode all the time, so people would be like, "Oh no, this totally ordinary thing where a beer tap just flew into the air and hit a helicopter." Obviously, that wasn't caused by a genius super brain telekinetic with a gross mustache. So the helicopter is crashing. It somehow manages to miss everybody in this huge crowd of people. Ryan Reynolds saves the day and becomes Green Lantern by turning the helicopter into a race car and then creating a giant Hot Wheels track to, I guess, turn it in circles and slow it down. And this was foreshadowed by a scene earlier between him and his nephew that had a Hot Wheels track in the scene. So Green Lantern saves
good
the day.
Yeah, good catch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's screenwriting 101 is something doesn't make sense in a movie unless there's some brief reference to it, however arbitrary, earlier in the movie. Things never happen in real life without being set up in the first act. But we're still in Act 2. Anyway, this thing happens. I don't remember what happens after that. Ryan Reynolds probably quits being Green Lantern like 100 times. Basically,
everybody doesn't realize it's Hal Jordan. They think it's his Green Lantern.
Yeah,
fellow.
Blake Lively, he goes to see her, tries to barely put on like a fucking voice, and he has his domino mask on. But she's like, I know it's you. Like, we grew up together.
Yeah,
what
which
the
is
fuck
a,
are you trying to pull? Which is kind of funny.
Yeah, which is a pretty good line. Pretty good moment that she doesn't fooled by his mask that doesn't even cover his hair. Doesn't cover his haircut.
I mean, honestly, you know, at this point we can just sort of skip ahead.
Yeah, they're falling in love. The Green Lanterns can't stop Parallax, the fear cloud. There's a big fight with the Brain Man, which ends with Parallax, the fear cloud, who apparently, I guess, was controlling Brain Man somehow, says, "You failed me," and destroys him. Green Lantern fights Parallax. It's this evil fear cloud that none of the Green Lanterns can figure out how to fight. It turns out the way to stop it is with missiles and explosives.
Yep.
And eventually...
Not with green blasts or nets or anything like that.
Yeah. And eventually Green Lantern, he has the genius idea. Mm-hmm. Now, no one would ever think of this before. Of taking this super evil bad guy and throwing him into the sun so that he burns to death.
Yeah, that's like a first time, right?
Maybe like, and it's weird that
what we're learning is that the rest of the Green Lantern Corps is kind of dim.
I guess so. That's, and then later he says, I mean, to them, later Sinestro gives a speech to the Green Lanterns and he says, Green Lantern, Ryan Reynolds had already given a speech to the Owens, one of the many times he quit being a Green Lantern, where he tells them that humanity is a young species, but the best thing about us is our humanity. And then later Sinestro says the same thing. What we thought was a weakness turned out to be his greatest strength, his humanity. Because I guess only the compassion of the human heart could think of throwing something into the sun to kill it. Like this. It really doesn't, nothing makes sense put together. And so in the end, everyone's okay. Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Except for Sinestro at the end puts on a yellow ring that they have forged for the power of fear.
Yeah, for no reason. There's no real reason for him to put that ring on. But
well, for the comic book fans out there.
They go, oh, I knew Sinestro was going to be a bad guy. I read the comics.
The thing that I knew was going to happen happened.
The guy whose name has Sinister in it. Yeah. How stupid is it to waste an entire movie trying to fool the audience into thinking Sinestro is a good guy?
I don't know.
I mean, he seems pretty evil.
He's got a penciled in mustache.
Kind of a dick.
I was saying,
he's
like,
a jerk. His name is Sinestro.
Maybe
it's not Benevolo.
Maybe they thought it was Sinestro. He just had like bad allergies.
They're not pronouncing it that way though.
That's
he's fighting that giant cloud monster
Parallax.
Yeah. He starts just throwing explosives at it, and that seems to work pretty well.
And Parallax goes, "Rawr!" Oh, and it's I don't know why they didn't just keep doing that. It's kinda like the American version of Godzilla, where Godzilla is rampaging through the streets of New York, and then they hit it with some missiles, and he dies. And it's like, well, why didn't you do that in the beginning? I guess, or not even missiles, rockets.
They were talking about how only one Green Lantern's ever been able to capture Parallax. Why did he put him in a prison? Why didn't he just throw him into the sun or something?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like there's like due process or something for a fucking fear monster.
Maybe
like,
there is. There's space cops.
Yeah.
They do things by the space book.
Yeah. By the way, I wish it was called Space Cops.
If it was called Green Space Cops, it's way better.
Yeah. So,
and they, what's weird is they also, they talk about, they're like, we Green Lanterns have forever traveled the universe, squashing injustice. It's like, well, you've done a pretty shitty job on Earth, because we've had a lot of terrible things happen just within the past 100 years. You know, Green
Lanterns.
Maybe
the problem was before that we had a human Green Lantern. Avancer was like, I don't care about
that
that much.
He was the problem. He was too busy showboating and hot-dogging, as you said.
Yes.
Hot-dogging.
He was too busy hot-dogging, burying Parallax and planets rather than stopping Hitler's.
He was paying more attention to his own race than ours.
Which is skinless purples.
Yep. And making really cool spacecrafts that he crashes, right?
Yeah, in his garage.
Yeah.
He's just out there on weekend on a Sunday morning, just tinkering in his driveway with that spacecraft.
Lazy.
So, I mean, you guys really liked this movie.
Oh, it was amazing.
It was directed by Martin Campbell.
There was a really good scene from about midway through
the sitcom Martin.
He directed Casino Royale and Golden.
And he did that stand-up special Run Tell Dat.
The first Zorro movie.
He's starring Black Knight.
He's actually a fairly good action director.
He is. It's too bad that this movie is terrible.
And like the climactic battles are like Ryan Reynolds and Stellan Skarsgård lying on the ground touching each other's foreheads. And that's the battle they're
pretty
having.
Pretty much, yeah.
And then Tim Robbins catches on fire at the end.
Oh, I forgot. Tim Robbins dies.
Scene's over.
Dies of fire.
Yeah, he gets the old double giant blowtorch.
The old double giant blowtorch. We've seen it so many times in movies.
It also makes me wonder.
Great when
it
burned up. That was. I mean, you didn't expect to see Tim Robbins burn up.
That's true.
It also makes me wonder
why. Didn't see it. You saw him go and then fire came all over the room. He didn't. It's not like you saw his flesh melting off his bones.
Why did the Peter Skarsgård character exist? Was he just there to keep Green Lantern busy for a little while before
the
big
minor
monster
villain
shows up?
Yeah, superhero movies need two villains these days. That's kind of just the way they do things. There's always, like, the big villain and the hench villain.
Okay.
I mean, you also needed his flamboyant performance.
You needed,
oh,
he was the
yeah
only thing bringing anything
set the
in
world
the movie
afire
to life. He was the only lively thing in a movie that it featured Blake Lively.
Oh.
Who was very dull.
Yeah.
And
mumbly
it
mouth.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the problem. The movie.
She's a pretty face. Look at.
Yeah, well, sure.
Yeah, so do a lot of other actresses.
I don't know, I'm just
that's
trying
not
to find the good in things.
A pretty
guys
face is
thanks,
not
Mr.
exactly
skin.
Pretty face is not exactly a rare thing among movie actresses. That's one of the when I was growing up, you know, when you're a young guy growing up, you
sure
prize beauty above all things. And then I realized
similar to the Stellan Skarsgård character.
Yes. Because who was for years in love with Blake Lively, even though they had nothing in common, just because she was pretty. But I realized I watched a lot of bad movies when I was a teenager and in college, and I realized they all had beautiful women in them. And I realized beautiful women are not a rare resource on this planet of ours. If there's enough of them that they'll take their tops off for like Roger Corman or less, then you know what? It's not diamonds.
You could probably find a beautiful woman to take her top off for love.
Exactly, and I did.
Yeah. Well, what a romantic way of
think
putting
about
that.
Think about that, Dan.
Well, all you lonely nerds out there, take Elliot's heartwarming tale to
heartwarming
to
tale of the non-valuableness of beauty.
Yeah, of devaluing women to
look,
heart.
All honor or gold on this earth is but dross.
Okay.
Have you heard the good news?
Not all that glitters is gold.
I guess what I'm saying is Blake Lively was not very good.
And
hey,
the power of will is the strongest thing in the galaxy.
I just realized, guys, this was our Gossip Girl month between this
what
movie and Country Song with Leighton Meester.
Oh, yeah. Got a theme month.
Yeah.
Flophouse theme month. Gossip Girl.
Gossip Girl December.
Tober. Gossip Girl Tober.
Is that a show? Or
when we rate this
like
movie,
it'll have
to be,
show?
Was this gossiplingly good, gruelingly bad?
Or
gossip girlingly good, bad? Good, bad.
Oh, man, it's going to be tough to pick.
I am Gossip Girlingly the Third. Good day to you, sir.
Oh, Mr. Gossip, sir. I guess Mr. Girlingly.
You may take my coat.
Ryan Reynolds is not a movie star. I hate to break it to everybody. He is a... I like him sometimes in... Because it's him in Adventureland, right?
Yeah.
He's very good in Adventureland in a small role, but he cannot carry a movie yet, at least.
Yeah, like, no, I think that he... I think, you know, in time he may, but I think that right now I would rather see him in supporting roles. There are a lot of actors out there that have been pushed for, like... main roles that I'm just like, let's just punch your weight.
Colin Farrell's and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're Colin Farrell's, you're what, you're Jason Patrick's?
Mm-hmm.
You're I guess that's just those two.
Al Pacino.
No, he could carry a movie. Actually, no, he can't, but no. He could at one point.
Adam Sandler's.
For years Brad Pitt was like that. He was much more fun when he showed up in smaller supporting parts, and he had a lot of boring.
Changed.
He made a lot of great movies. Meet Joe roles. Black, The Mexican.
Yep.
But
meet,
he just
Meet Joe Mexican.
Meet Joe Mexican and Black Mexican, and Meet Mexa Black. Meet Joe Mexican. I guess it would be Jose Mexican.
I want to see Black Mexican. That's like a great 70s film
starring Brad Pitt.
So,
Richard Roundtree is Black Mexican.
So this is the Green Lantern podcast.
I guess so. There's not a lot. I mean, Green Lantern is a very, it's like such a bleh movie. Like the only word I can use to describe it is bleh. Like it's just.
But it's a pretty popular comic book, right?
I don't know why. Green Lantern is one of the most popular superheroes right now. There are like four or five Green Lantern titles, and he has almost always been one of the most boring characters. He has his main character, alter ego has no personality. And that we're probably going to lose Flophouse listeners by me saying this. Green Lantern fans are rabid. But they like...
No. Controversy will sell this podcast, Elliot.
I'm going to make the stand. Green Lantern is boring and stupid. And you can quote me on that.
But he can... anything he imagines, he can make.
But he and just imagines... Like,
if he can dream it, it can be it.
If he believes that he can achieve it. But all he imagines is like big boxing gloves or like green mouse traps or fly swatters. And... he's just like, he's not an interesting character.
I'm going to make a plea in favor of that being awesome, which is this. I mean, like, I've not read Green Lantern, so, like, I'm just, maybe in execution is what ruins it.
Yes.
But, like, if I just hear about, it's a comic book about some space cops.
Yep.
And what they do is they have green rings that make big goofy green things that you fight people with. Like, that sounds great. Like, that sounds like
the
classic
problem.
DC silliness.
That does sound great, except it's not silly. It's taken super seriously.
Yeah. And as this movie, I think,
as this movie shows. Like, the characters only very briefly act. They are described as space cops. You don't see them doing any cop stuff. Like, wouldn't it be great if...
like, pulling people over for
fast
in their spaceships?
If Ryan Reynolds,
space
instead
paperwork.
Of... instead of, like, some lame... couple minutes of training, like Ryan Reynolds was brought along with Kilowog on like a call to a planet that needed Green Lantern help.
Right.
And maybe Ryan Reynolds, through his inexperience, almost fucks it up. Kilowog and Sinestro have to save his bacon. And so there's a genuine, like, you see what they do as space cops, and you're like, this is awesome. And it's not like pulling people over, but it's like maybe like there's an earthquake that's pulling a
Some
planet.
Some guy
apart.
Selling death sticks to little kids.
Yeah, exactly. They got to use their Jedi powers to make him change how he thinks about his life. But
and
it's
they
like,
commiserate over some space donuts and some terrible space coffee.
Exactly. There's no...
perfect.
In the space break room. There's no more boring scene in any movie than when, like, a council of elders convenes to discuss something. And this movie has, like, five scenes like that. And instead of seeing these guys in action, you'll just see them walking around talking about dangerous Green Lantern stuff.
Especially when the council of elders scene is just a bunch of, like... computer-generated blob heads sitting on top of sticks with long robes.
Yeah, it's a bunch of blue Mickey Roonies in like, floor-length red
Mickey
gowns.
Bloonies.
Mickey Bloonies, if you will. Just sitting around in stone thrones, just looking at everyone like, I disagree.
Well, they barely
the
talk,
human
too. Like,
speaks the truth.
The human.
There's a long scene where Sinestro gives, like, this whole speech talking to them, and I keep expecting Sinestro to be like, are you guys even listening to me? Because you haven't said anything
you're
this
kind
whole time.
You're like two stories up. Can you hear?
Staring,
can you hear me?
Staring straight ahead. I just need like a a nod or something to indicate. Like,
but
you're
that's
attention.
The problem with the Green Lantern mythos is they spend a lot of time. The Green Lantern spend a lot of time talking about how noble and great the Green Lanterns are, but you don't see them Green Lanterning all that much, and it's taken very seriously. And when they do silly things like. One of the best Green Lantern characters, as far as I'm concerned, is a guy who is a dog man, who's kind of like a clumsy dog man Green Lantern, and, you know, they don't do much with him.
Yeah.
That does sound pretty great.
Okay. See, because in my head, I'm kind of like imagining like, you know, like the era of Batmite and what they would have done with Green Lantern.
They did like nothing. That's the thing. Yeah. The Green Lantern kind of came after that era was at its height, I guess. I could be getting my years wrong. Green Lantern that we're seeing here is a product of the 60s. Well, I guess there's Batmite stuff in the 60s. Like, but the really goofy DC stuff, a lot of that's from the 50s.
So his ring isn't magic. It's science.
It's, well, here's the thing. Your Golden Age Green Lantern, Alan Scott, had a magic ring.
Okay.
Then your Silver Age Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, had a space ring.
And the one we saw is a space science ring.
Is a science ring, yeah. And it's shaped like an old lantern for Lord knows what reason. Because the space aliens also used railroad lanterns at some point.
Okay.
Well, they had the space trains. So they had the space trek where they go through the they're all pushing west.
Yeah, in that's space. Right. Because there's a west in space.
Manifest space to me.
Yep.
All of space will belong to us. They're stopping the space engines.
They climb aboard Astro Train, the Decepticon.
Astro Train. Yeah, they drive a golden spike into space, thus connecting the Pacific and Atlantic space roads.
Read your space history, guys.
So the movie just takes itself too seriously when it's about a guy with a magic green thing that makes other green things.
Okay. Well, I think we can wrap it up.
Magic green things.
Yeah.
And also, like that. How much better would it have been to have a climax that actually involved Hal Jordan, like, doing something that nobody else could do?
Like flying a plane?
Or throw yeah, somebody maybe in
like,
the sun?
Like, he briefly makes green planes, but he doesn't really do much with them.
Yeah.
Like, he just throws a guy into a sun.
Our sun.
No, there's more than one sun.
I know there's more than one sun, but...
My three suns.
So let's... On that note, let's give just our like final judgment for the movie.
Now, was it gossip-girdlingly good? Dan, what are the categories? Final judgments.
Final judgments.
Was this a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie you kind of liked? Stuart, I'll go to you.
I'm going to go bad, bad, actually. For a superhero movie, it was shockingly boring, and not that much stuff happened. In a two-hour movie that seemed to not really pause for breath except to lie around and argue about stuff.
Yeah, the characters did a lot of lying around or sitting around.
I'm going to shock everyone.
It is Shocktober.
It is not Shocktober.
Shocksember.
Yeah. I'm going to give this a marginal. I kind of liked it.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't stand up and defend it during the discussion.
Well,
you have failed, Green Lantern.
Are you talking about the parts that you saw when you weren't going down to check your mail or play Sonic the Hedgehog? Because those parts, saw those things.
It was 5 minutes at least, or at most. I wasn't as bored by it as you guys were until like the last 30 minutes. Like there, like when
you did,
we did stop it, and I was like,
"There's a scene where Ryan Reynolds is like, I can't do this," and Blake Lively says, "You have to," and I'm like, "This is taking forever." And Dan goes, "Well, the movie's almost over. We've only got pause this movie." Sees there's 25 minutes left. He goes, "Oh man."
Luckily, yeah. Like 29. 10 of those were credits.
There was a lot of credits. That's true.
But I liked watching like a lot of the silliness of it, just like the goofy monster Green Lantern Corps goofing around.
They barely goofed around. Yeah. They mainly just stood around and put their rings in the air and made light come out of their rings.
I liked the fact that because it was a good director, like shooting a shitty script, like it had all these script problems, but at least the actual like I feel like he was doing as much as he could with it to move it along and like make it comprehensible.
And you got to see Tim Robbins look around frantically before being set on fire.
That is it. Like I said, it's worth it for the moment where Tim Robbins, you know, had to act being levitating, looking around scared.
No, I would not go so far as to recommend this to people, but
you just did.
If it was,
you called it your pick of the year. You put in like, your flop 10.
If I had paid for it, I would have been furious. But if it came on HBO, something a service that I'd already paid for,
you're giving a green light to Green Lantern.
Oh, yeah.
Copyright 2011.
What did you just copyright?
the year? My thing. Thing I just did.
You can't copyright. What was that? A blurb?
Yeah.
I understand. What are you going to do with that? Put it on t-shirts?
Yeah. Posters.
I can copyright it. I mean,
it's not even yours. Stuart said it. He can copyright it.
Nope, I swooped in and I copyrighted it.
Oh, I didn't know you could just do that.
Yep.
Yep. It's a no takesies backsies policy around here.
Oh.
Elliot,
You're probably going to shock us all and say...
I'm going to shock everybody and say, I thought it was a bad, bad movie. Right. This is not the worst movie we've seen. Like, if it came on television and you're sick at home from work and you got nothing to do and you're not really expecting much, then go ahead. Watch Green Lantern on TV.
Now, all the...
Waste your time.
All the naysayers...
Basically, yeah.
All like, the naysayers on the internet are going to say, this is just because you write for Marvel, and this is a Marvel DC
I am a Marvel zombie. The House of Ideas is my home, and DC is the distinguished competition, yes, but it's also brand Ech. Those are all Marvel references. But it's just like, if your life is seeking out things that you're going to enjoy and trying new things and making the most of every moment, don't watch Green Lantern. But if you're just sitting around waiting for death to save you from the endless monotony of time, go ahead. Watch Green Lantern. That's the highest recommendation I can give it. So, Dan?
Fair enough. I'm going to go on to letters.
Yay!
This one's titled Hey Floppas. It's from
Street
Efren, last name withheld.
Nora Efren.
And it says, regarding the floppers' respective popularity,
okay,
I've noticed that Dan Stewart's and Elliot's popularity is inversely proportional with the amount of episodes they've appeared in.
What?
Maybe Dan should take a break? Or just let his alter ego, the Flophouse house cat, that's not my...
That is a really sneaky way to get Dan to take an episode off.
Well, also, it's very insulting. He's basically just saying outright that he hates me. And other
I mean,
people.
He's not outright. It's pretty roundabout.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder. Yeah. So you need to take a hike. It's hard for people to like you when you're right there.
Well, I control all of the equipment, so that's not going to happen.
We actually can't do an episode when Dan's not available yet, because he owns the mixing board and the computer, and he knows how to work everything.
But he goes
Mistakes,
on to say...
Mistakes, you know, ignore those.
Second, I live in Southern California, the podcast mecca. Maybe what's needed to ignite some interest in the Flophouse is a good old-fashioned East Coast-West Coast rivalry.
Uh-oh.
Now here we've got WTF, Adam Carolla, Nerdist, and Earwolf. While daunting the relative dearth of New York-based podcasts places you in an underdog position. Hey, what about a Flophouse Mike and Tom Eat Snacks team-up? I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I've not. Is that a podcast?
I assume.
I don't really follow podcasts. I don't have time... I don't have the time to seek out new things, which is why I'm mad I wasted 2 hours watching Green Lantern.
Yeah. But I think an East Coast-West Coast rivalry could pop up the numbers. I mean, at least until Ellie gets shot.
Or let's try something new. One, I'd rather not be shot in a drive-by.
No.
But two, hey, why not an East Coast-West Coast cooperation?
Yeah.
Does everything have to be competition?
Okay.
Let's work together for everyone's benefit.
Yeah.
So somebody out in the West Coast, find a podcast there, mm-hmm. and...
tell them to promote us.
Tell them to
promote us. And we promise we will totally do the same thing.
Exactly. There you go. Yeah.
Oh, I thought they were just going to like send each other cupcakes or something.
I'm calling it. Cupcakes may be involved as well.
You're the baker.
Pods Across America.
I like it.
I don't know if that's going to catch on.
It already has. Look outside. Stuart looks out window. People are holding signs reading Pods Across America. A Pods Across America parade is going down the street.
We did it.
he has a P.S. Have you tried underwater sex yet?
So he's the guy who runs Aquafan.
I guess.
That's a deep Flophouse cut.
It's a super
That's
deep
cut. That's an old one.
This is titled Dance Hook. It's from Brian, last name withheld.
Okay, a little late, but that's okay.
I'm going to assume it's Brian Lehrer.
New York Public Radio's Brian Lehrer writing in. Dear Flophouse, I've been thinking about Dan's predicament of lacking a hook, and I believe I have a rather simple solution. Dan needs his own take on movie recommendations.
Hmm.
While Stuart offers from his 1980s horror rotation, and Elliot has his classics of the 30s, Dan insists on giving a wide range of different movies, suggesting a fully rounded personality.
Hey, wait a minute.
Elliot's recommendations, on the other hand, points out his love of old-timey comedy bits, and Stuart's 80s gorefest picks show off his mixture of whimsy and irony.
I recommend new movies all the time.
Dan could create his own personality through idiosyncratic suggestions like only recommending Korean action movies or 1950s musicals. I don't want to stifle Dan's creativity here, but the best hook might just be having a detailed recommendation philosophy and building off of that.
That's not a bad idea. Right now, Dan's hook could be that he's sitting on an exercise ball. He's the only podcast host.
Maybe my hook will be that I
probably
have a strong core.
His hook, yeah, is the strength of your core.
Yeah. Well,
so I'm going to tighten up.
So, Dan, what's your
up, guys?
What's your new hook? Your recommendation philosophy going to be?
I'm going to recommend only public service announcements.
It's not really movies.
Yep.
The 1970s.
That falls within the purview of the podcast.
Are those available for people to watch?
Probably on YouTube. I don't know.
Probably on YouTube. I don't know.
I also have no special knowledge of the genre.
Yeah, Dan's new hook is the guy who doesn't do research and doesn't know what he's talking about.
Doesn't read the letters beforehand.
So,
thank you to everyone who's written in so far.
Yeah.
I feel like I've been told by listeners that we don't thank people enough for writing in.
You've been told by two specific listeners.
Yeah.
That.
So let's keep reading the letters, shall we? Thank you again.
Personal friends. This is titled, Is That a Bit? From Travis, last name withheld.
Travis Bickle.
It is, yes.
Having listened to the majority of your back catalog, I've noticed a reoccurring theme. When Elliot recaps movies, he often stops and asks, should I give away the ending? This question is usually followed by a millisecond-long pause before inevitably revealing the climax. At first, I thought maybe he felt a little remorse about spoiling these movies, but then I realized he secretly loves it. When he first guested on the podcast, he was somewhat timid and reserved. Over time, his recapping progressed from quietly confident to maniacally irresponsible. It has been fascinating and tragic to listen to Elliot's decline into madness, and I eagerly await the episode one day when he will finally embrace his destiny as supervillain, the Ruiner. This is
not
one
even
example.
Just the contest ruiner, the Ruiner.
Yep.
Now, would your head get really bulbous, you think?
It would have to be. That
probably
would ruin my hair.
The Ruiner of things. Actually, I'm going to skip ahead to the PS.
What, are you not going to read the rest of the letter?
Since you're too modest
gets
to do
really
it yourself, I'd like to remind anybody who enjoys the show to donate so we can help keep the lights on and the reggae tone out.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that, Travis.
Hey, thanks.
Remember to listen to Travis and donate so that Dan can afford to do this. And
well, that, I mean, now I can. I used to not be able to.
Shh, we're going
to
get some money out of this. Okay. And remember to take a look at the Flophouse Wiki also and help them update and fill out that, because there's a lot of episodes that still need our stupid movie pitches described in text.
Yep, we need Elliot needs to be reminded of all of his great ideas.
Yeah, because there's already a lot. I totally had forgotten about Million Dollar Getaway until the entry for it showed up on the Flophouse Wiki, and now I remember how good it was.
Yeah.
And my offer to Hollywood still stands, $700,000 for that idea.
Very reasonable. It's a very reasonable price.
Yeah, for a blockbuster.
Mm-hmm. And this last letter is titled, Origin Stories of Friendship.
Oh,
from
weird.
Matt, first name withheld, Siegel.
Wait, what? Hold on. But you told us the first name.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I fucked it up, guys.
Don't worry, we'll fix it in post.
Yeah.
So he says, I was wondering if you guys had ever talked about how you all met. Well, I mean, we've talked about it
with each other.
But
we've told, like I told my wife the other day, was like, how do you know Dana Stewart again?
Uh-huh. But anyway, why have they been in my apartment?
What? Why do I know them?
I think I remember Dan saying that he and Stewart went to the same college, but I've only ever heard Elliot referred to as a friend with no indication of whether you guys have been friends since time immemorial. A la the Muppet Babies, or just recently met.
Nanny did raise all of us.
You'd be Gonzo.
Or some situation in between. Maybe I missed an episode where you explained it, but if not, I'm always interested in hearing about origin stories. Plus, it would be really helpful to have an episode to cite when writing the Flopper History page on the wiki. Also, I want to know how to make friends, so any insight there would be great.
But you came to the wrong place.
It's true that you and Stuart both went to FU, where you majored in boobs.
Yep.
And where did you guys meet again?
We both went to Earlham College, but we weren't. I don't know that we knew each other during that time. Actually,
yeah, we actually both did competing comic strips for the local school newspaper. But we did
the local school newspaper.
Not some of the school.
To the national school newspaper
For Earlham College. Yeah, and no, but. You know, Dan was into theater stuff, and
you were into being cool.
Yeah, I was a cool guy.
See, I imagined you guys as roommates, Dan being the nerdy brain, and Stuart being the party hard party
my
animal.
Roommate,
that was his other roommate.
My roommate, Bill Hickey, who was a party hardy gentleman, was very good friends with Stuart. And I feel like, in a large way, that's kind of the link, is we're both friends with Bill. And then once we were both living in New York.
Radio host Bill Hickey.
Of the river. And Boston. but we became better friends.
You don't
listen
to the radio?
I don't listen to Boston radio.
Okay.
Now, Elliot.
Now, my origin story is I was bitten by a radioactive know-it-all.
Okay.
and given the power to talk too much. But Dan and I met through the comedy theater that was being run by our mutual friend, Eric Marcizak. There used to be a comedy theater in the city that he ran. First called Above Kleptomania. First it was called Above Kleptomania.
And it was above a sex store. It was above Show World.
It was in Show World, which no longer exists in New York. It's now the Laugh Factory. But Playland, I think it's called, which is right next to Show World, still exists.
Mm.
So if you want to know where we were performing comedy, just walk in there and you'll see that it's, at the time, I think it was 25 cents for a minute of video. Yeah. And
that's a pretty good price.
They had like the upstairs was decorated with like ceramic clowns.
The thing, like,
it was very weird.
But we were literally
it was a circus themed.
We were
club.
Literally up performing upstairs in a sex shop and a place that had like viewing booths, like live sex and well, not like live sex show, but like I think that there are strippers in there.
Not live sex shows.
Yeah.
This isn't Tijuana.
No, I know.
Come on.
But you would go upstairs and the stage that we're performing on was clearly a stage that used to be used for stripping.
Yeah, there's a lot of mirrors all over the stage, and no pole, but you could tell there probably was a pole there at some point.
And when we were doing comedy shows, like you could see that every once in a while, men would come upstairs, like thinking that there was going to be some sort of sex thing upstairs,
and they'd sit in there and watch for a couple minutes, and then get up and leave.
Yeah,
and but
you mean they weren't satisfied by your comedy, guys?
No, not by our avant-garde sketch comedy that we were doing at the time.
I mean, if you have a boner, comedy doesn't really do much about that,
unless it's sexy comedy.
Yeah.
Ooh.
but we didn't really meet when we didn't get to know each other that much when it was at Show World.
No.
Later, Eric had a different theater space that was a basement theater underneath what's now the Gene Frankel, and at the time was the Gene Frankel Theater, which still exists. And he ran a space called Juvie Hall down there, and we all performed there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember very
Various
well,
shows.
I remember very well, the first conversation I can really remember having with Dan was when we were helping Eric paint the entire theater and lobby space black with like rollers, just like painting the ceilings, floors, walls, everything with black paint. So
yeah,
that would be like 5 minutes into the movie of the Flophouse. No, actually the Flophouse story, the first 5 minutes would be Dan and Stuart at college
partying.
Then the next, then you'd have about 10 minutes of
Couple
them in New
montages.
York. Then I'd come in 15 minutes in with the painting scene. And then
later on I'd be writing for your stage show. Which,
oh, yeah, that's right. Dan was a writer for my stage show that I used to do, the New Kalen Show.
And I saw you down.
Which replaced the Midnight Kalen.
I saw a couple of those.
Yeah, I used to do a show called the Midnight Kalen, and then it moved into
Primetime.
Primetime became the Primetime Kalen and then the New Kalen Show.
I saw when you
really
had
banking
Evan
off of the name recognition that you'd fostered.
Well, my ego at the time was very big, and that was the show at first where my only promise to Eric was, I promise I will do the show if I never have to prepare material ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it became the New Kalen Show, we wrote for it, and Dan had a segment that I insisted he call The Real McCoy, even though he hated that.
Memories.
Oh, but I was going to say, in the Flophouse movie, by the 30-minute mark, Stewart's video game has been swapped out with one that has a chip that the Soviets are after.
Okay.
And so, of course, spies are chasing us, and we have to go to Europe and so forth.
Like we did in real life.
Exactly, yeah.
And then Dabney Coleman shows up and saves the day.
Well, he tries to save the day, and we save him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, guys.
He'll be like a father figure, though, right?
But like a mean father figure.
Oh, okay.
At this point, we should really plug our live show.
That's for sure. Let's skip the regular recommendations.
So now that you're all bored about our history.
Yeah. Let's talk about
our future.
We're doing another show.
You may have noticed on the website that we've got another live screening coming up. Our last one, where we watched the movie Twin Sitters, was an unqualified success.
Yeah.
Total success. Everybody loved it.
Almost sold out.
Almost, let's just say sold out.
But yeah, sure. Why not? We'll lie to you. Sold out.
Margin of error, it was sold out. And we've got another screening coming up January 20th at 8 p.m.
Yeah.
At 92i Tribeca in Manhattan, New York City, America, Earth, Milky Way Galaxy. And we're going to be showing the movie 12 Rounds, starring John Cena. And we just watched it again Sunday, the 2 days before this. To
confirm it was as stupid as we remembered.
And it was even stupider. It is a really ridiculously silly movie. And we're going to be providing live commentary.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be some informational presentations by Matt Carman and Ksenia Yarosh of I Love Bad Movies, who are producing the show.
Yeah. Our I like to think of them as our sister publication They do a zine about bad movies.
Called
then,
I Love Bad
and
Movies.
And then we'll do some kind of intermission, maybe a raffle. Who knows?
Well, I don't know. I don't know why the raffle.
I don't know if we should
I'll
promise
pull out,
a
t shirt cannon.
At the last screening, we did interview our wives to find out how they were enjoying the movie. We're not going to be doing that this time.
At this screening, our wives are very happy to know that they're not their presence is not required.
Yeah, my wife has asked me several times, I don't have to be at this thing, right?
I mean, you know, they may show up, they may not, but...
My wife won't. So if you're hoping to catch a glimpse of her, no, she's as elusive as Sasquatch.
Yeah.
But January 20th...
far more beautiful.
Yes, thank you, Stuart. It's implied. January 20th...
Danielle, did you hear in the latest podcast, Elliot compared you to Sasquatch?
She doesn't listen to this. January 20th, 92 I Tribeca, and it's on their website, 92itribeca.org, so you can buy tickets now.
Yeah.
Wait, so
do
I can go
now.
On the while I'm listening to this podcast on my podcast machine.
You type internet into your computer.
Type internet Flophouse Stewart, and you'll have already purchased a ticket.
It's that easy.
No. January 20th, 12 rounds.
Yeah, links. I mean, if we're talking too quickly, as Elliot is wont to do, links.
If you think I'm talking too quickly, just get faster ears, man.
Links to all of this will be.
I'm not slowing
on the website.
Down. I'm limitless.
www.flophousepodcast.com.
Dot limitless. So we what else? Don't you have another screening coming up or something?
Oh, I do. Well, my regular monthly screening series is also at 92 I Tribeca, and our first one of 2012 will be on January 4th at 7:30 PM. It's a Wednesday. We're showing The Beguiled with Clint Eastwood. And
Stuart Wellington recommendation from a few years back.
Stuart Wellington put his personal stamp of approval, which I think is in the shape of a penis, on this movie. It's really good. With Clint Eastwood.
Did you ever get that ink off of your penis, by the way, Stuart?
No, I did not.
So that's two screenings you should go to next month. The Beguiled, January 4th, for a good movie.
I shouldn't have used red ink. It scares the shit out of my wife.
But even more importantly, January 20th, 12 rounds with the Flophouse crew.
Yep.
Which is us.
And now all that's left is to wish you floppy holidays.
It sounds horrible.
From the Flophouse. God rest ye merry. Guys, why aren't you singing?
Cut it.
Yeah, no. This is going to get edited out, right?
I assume so, yeah. Okay. Happy right. flop. What is it?
Maybe if I
holidays?
Just say holidays. Or cough a bunch, we'll have to edit it out.
Yeah.
Nope. Hasn't happened before.
Okay.
So floppy holidays and a floppy new year.
Yeah. Not sure when we will be with you again next, and maybe a little later because of the holidays. May not. Who knows? Who
That's
knows?
The what
it's question mark.
The mystery of life.
Who knows what the new year will bring for all of us? Right, guys?
You're getting really weird. We shouldn't do this in the afternoon anymore. It should only be at night.
We got to do it at night when Dan's too tired to be weird.
All right. Well, for the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
And I will continue to be Elliot Kalin.
See you guys later.
It's creepy.
Bitch.
Well, that's you're basing him just on how people play with him in Marvel vs. Capcom.
I mean, it's
side guy. That's yeah. what I say about Magneto. Pick a fucking side.
Stop spamming your projectile attack.